Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Ross Kimascani, and on the panel tonight, we got Professor Ra, we have Ernest McBride Jr., and Brother Ahi, and we're expecting Brother Mashinda to show up. Hopefully, he does. Now, tonight is a kind of combination type series tonight because we have a series called Born and Raised in Compton, which an idea came from one of our team members. And I said I would do it, talking about, people that were talking to people who were raised in Compton or been in Compton for a long time, just to tell the narrative from our perspective, the people who grew up there or who lives there, instead of taking the word for all these people who speak negatively about Compton or people who think they know. So we're bringing it straight to you. We're straight from Compton. And our guest this evening, interesting character here. When I was a kid, he was born and raised in Compton. At least I think he was born here. He'll tell us, but I know I've been knowing him since a kid. So I was playing ball at Luther's Park in Compton as a kid. And they had the name of our team was Rose Street, and we're out of Wilson Park. And at Luther's Parks, they had a few teams, and one of the main teams was the Footsteps. Never forget this team. This team wore black and gold, and they looked sharp out there. They were like a basketball version of the Pittsburgh Steelers, but wearing black most of the times and gold. So it was a real fun time in my childhood coming up playing in Parks and Recreation, Compton Parks and Recreation. And this team, the Footsteps, they had a coach, a commanding coach by the name of Fred Kressel. And they also had these tall, gangly looking players. And I remember this one cat on the team, dark skinned brother. And he was nice. And I just was in awe watching these guys play basketball. They were older than me. And I was like, yeah, these dudes, they pretty tough, but I'm gonna come after them because we were Rose Street over there at Wilson Park. So tonight our guest is Brother Calvin Kressel, and he's one of us. And I'm gonna let him talk to us about his experience growing up in Compton. Let him tell us all about himself and things that he's doing, because he's doing a lot of good things for the community. So, Brother Calvin, thanks for coming this evening. And man, let us know what it's like in Compton. What's good in the hood, brother?
Hey, I just thank you all for inviting me, first of all. And I am elated, first of all, to talk to positive brothers doing wonderful things. I like to be around positive people, and that's who I aspire to be. I aspire to just be a positive role model and an example. Just to say that, yeah, we got a whole lot of good coming out of Compton. A lot of times we get a lot of negative press. A lot of negative press, but I love Compton. I love the way I was raised. I had a really a good opportunity foundation in order to be successful. So I am Calvin E. Kressel Senior. And I do have a junior. We'll get into that in a little bit, but I am excited to say that I grew up, yes, in Compton. Born and raised in Compton. Been in Compton many, many years, and I still invest a lot in Compton right now. I grew up in a place called Richland Farms, which is a place where in the middle of Compton that is like a farming community. Horses and cows and chickens and ducks and all these type of things in the hood. Everyone has big yards with a whole lot of acreage. And that Richland Farms area is rich. We one of the few areas in the city that doesn't have sidewalks. So when I grew up, we had, people riding horses up and down the street and doing different things. So I learned a lot It was almost like I was in Compton, but then I was in on a farm, really, or environment that was like a really a rural type of area. So I love that area, and I was raised by my mother and father, the Honorable Fred Kressel, who was one time a councilman, and then my mother, Ora Faye Kressel. And I was fortunate enough to have good parents, good strong parents that invested in all the children. I grew up with three other siblings. I had a brother named Damon who's going on to glory. I had a brother named Stevie who's going on to glory. I had a sister named Jackie who's going on to glory. And it's really wild that I'm like the last Kressel remaining because all my siblings are gone, my mom and dad are gone, and we didn't have a whole lot of other family. So I'm glad to be able to carry on the Kressel's name. I was educated right there in Compton, all Compton schools, went to Robert F. Kennedy, Walton Junior High School, Compton High School, graduated there, went on to Cal State Dominguez Hills. And I was there for a while. Matter of fact, I was Kevin Burrell's roommate in college. I don't know. I was right there with Burrell, and I love that big fella. Love the big fella. And he actually inspired me a lot. I spoke at his funeral when he was killed. Kevin Burrell, by the way, is one of the first officers that was killed in many years. He was killed along with a guy named McDonald. And I spoke at Kevin's funeral, and I love the big fella. But anyway, I grew up in Compton, went to D Dominguez. At Dominguez, I met the love of my life, Miss Pamela Smith back then. Now she's Pamela Smith Kressel. And we've been married for 42 years. You hear what I said? 42 years. We have invested in each other, we worked as a partnership. We got married when we were basically children, 20 years old. The story is, I met this woman, fell in love with her, and actually impregnated her way before we got. I impregnated her, and then later on, I asked her to marry me. And we just got married with no big wedding. It was just me, my wife, and the justice of the peace and the justice of the peace wife, and no family. Because we decided that we wanted to get married. We were living in a little apartment. So we got married. And then we had to work on really learning each other and learning what it takes to have a good relationship. Right now, we've been married, like I said, 42 years. We went back and got a certification in marriage. And also, by the way, I have a degree from Cal State Dominguez Hills. Me and my wife, we marched together. In 1988, we were working full time and we graduated with our degrees. And then we continued our education. We have a master's from Azusa Pacific that we graduated with our master's in organizational leadership and management. I got a theology degree from Caleb School of Theology. What else? Honorary doctorate from of several places, but we thank God for that. We raised seven children. We only had two children of our own, but when our family members died, we took in those children. We took them in and we raised, at one time, we had a total of five children. We were raised at one time. What happened? My wife's sister passed, and we took in her three children and raised them. Later on, my sister died. My sister died, and we took in her two children. So we raised a lot of children. My career is interesting. Along with doing the ministry, I'm a senior pastor of Greater Mount Sinai in Compton, California. We'll get into that later. But along with that, I was fortunate enough to get a job working for the government in the early in the 80s, mid 80s. I started working for the federal government, came in as like a clerk, a clerk typist. Then we were able to graduate when we got our degrees. Both me and my wife, we went into career positions for the federal government. My wife went into Department of DOD, later IRS, and then GSA. I went into a career with the U.S. Customs Service, and then later on Department of Justice. So I got into that area. After I got my degree, I was able to get in law enforcement. And when I looked into really getting into that area, I went into an area where it was literally no blacks. It was, I remember counting, it was probably like 200 agents and five were black. And I wanted to get in that area. I had to break through, break through and get in that area. Very difficult for me to get into law enforcement. I tell people this is one of my things that my themes in life. I use a threefold D's. I say determination, drive, and destiny. So when I got into that U.S. Customs Service, I was determined. I was determined to get a job as a special agent. All white folks, couple of blacks, very few Latinos, very few. They were mostly white males. And I end up, after getting my degree, I applied for the job as special agent 21 times. I got turned down 21 times. I was on what they call the best qualified list for 17 times. Went through interview after interview after interview, could not get hired. Finally, I broke through. I had to fight through and I was able to get in. And it was the best. To me, it was just an outstanding career. So I got into law enforcement and at federal law enforcement. And I did that at U.S. Customs for a total of, I believe it was 14 years, or 14 years I was with the U.S. Customs Service. Later on, I was able to put in, I got recommended for another job in the government, and it was a promotional job up. And I went to work for a DOJ. Department of Justice, Office of the Inspector General. That was an interesting job because then I became like the internal affairs for the Justice Department. So in that position, I was first of all, I was the only black. There's no other blacks when I got hired were doing what I was doing in on the West Coast. So I got hired into that position, and then I would investigate the FBI, the DEA, the ATF, the U.S. Marshals, and the Bureau of Prisons. So, whenever they got out of line, I would do those type of investigations, which made me become like really a despised person by a whole lot of government agents because I was taking them down. They were doing things. They were on the take. They were taking bribes. That was my job. To go in and do an investigation. If they were stealing money, if they were stealing drugs, if they were accused of abusing people, whatever it was, I would do those type of investigations. And it was really an interesting job. And that job, I got into doing some of everything. I think the most noteworthy thing I did is that I went undercover in the prison. Went undercover in the prison as an inmate, and it was a problem that they were having with the guards. So I ended up going undercover, doing some things, and we ended up arresting five people. So that was a big case, and I had to testify, and no one knew who I was. I was in that prison, if you can imagine, scared to death. I ain't gonna lie, I was scared to death off of that prison, but I had to keep on my cover. And actually, my role that I utilized, because I did a whole lot of undercover work, I utilized people who I knew in the neighborhood I grew up, who were drug dealers. And I was supposed to be a shot caller. So I used that whole scenario of people I knew, combined it together, and became really a really bad guy, or an appearing to be a bad guy off in the jail. Then I got into ministry. So I got into ministry even while I was working as an agent. I got into ministry. I always felt that God was the head of my life and he was leading and guiding me, and I wanted to give back. So I got into the ministry, and I got saved. I got saved because of my wife, and she was a good church girl. So I started going to church with her, and I learned about the Lord, and I accepted the Lord. And then later on, I got in the ministry, and I started working with young people, youth. It was kind of embedded in me to work with people, because that's what my parents did. So I started working with young people, and really building up that youth program. We started doing like a lot of outreach, reaching the folks in the community. I took the things I knew from a kid. We start doing basketball teams and volleyball teams, and then we had the drill teams that my wife was in charge of. And we just did a lot of took the kids on trips. We started taking the kids, exposing them, and also just bringing in kids from community, all these vacation Bible schools and stuff like that. And really made a difference. And then later on, when I was in one of these training schools, the pastor who was in charge ended up leaving. And then they asked me to take over the church. And that's why I took over the church. I've been in charge of that church for 30 years now and invested in so many people and really trying to give back. What else? Me and my wife, we travel. We travel a lot. I always had a desire. Me and my wife, when we got together, we said we had a desire just to travel and see the world. So, by the grace of God, we have traveled to, I mean, we've been to probably around 80 different countries. We travel all the time. We invest in just really seeing the world from a different perspective, because once you get out of your environment that you're familiar with, you learn that, do you really find that people are just people? There are different races and nationalities, but people are people. So we go as much as we can. We budget travel in. We've been everywhere. We've been to Africa. We've been to China. We've been to Vietnam. We've been to, you name it. We've been to islands, all the islands. We've been all throughout area, many, many different countries. Even this year, we have a trip. We're going to the Prague. We're going to Hungary, and we're going to some more places in about a month, and unlike many ministers or preachers or pastors, we do a lot of fun things. We go to concerts all the time, we go to plays all the time, we enjoy people, and we enjoy just having a good time. And wherever we go, we represent who we are. Sometimes oh, by the way, we have another house that we bought. We thought it was going to be our retirement home, but now it's just our getaway home, and that's in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And wherever we go, like when we're in Myrtle Beach and when we travel, we represent not only ourselves, but for many folks, they haven't been exposed to Black folks, and they have a different ideology of who we are from what they've seen or what they've been fed. So when we start dealing with them, we represent. We're like, hey, we're African American people, and we're people just like you are, and we love, and we're educated, and we have done things in order to live in a certain area or to travel. And people are often blown away. So I think that's enough just talking about me. You all should have an idea of who I am. And I'm always open. So I'm open to talk to anybody. And you all have any questions? Hey, I'm prepared for anything you got.
Okay, well, I'm gonna say a few things, and I also have a few questions. I'd normally let the panel go first, but I'm gonna go first since this is born and raised in Compton. So now, what I notice is you seem very well rounded, and when it comes to law enforcement, because you were in that.
I'll be off just okay about 7. Okay.
And so, now you said you were scared in prison, but when you're dealing with these corrupt type people, did you ever fear that they would try to come after you?
Oh yeah, I actually had some come after me. I had people who found out. I had one scenario where one of the guys I was working with actually informed them that I was a cop. So, well, a fed, and they actually followed me home one time. They followed me home, and then I had, of course, I caught their tail. I caught that they were following me, and I took them on a different route instead of going home. And then as they were following, they were coming by. I pulled my weapon and I pointed at them and say, "Okay, what are we gonna do?" And then they sped off. So yeah, that's one scenario. But I had a whole lot of different type of things because you run into corrupt individuals. You have people. I had another guy who was working with me on a daily, and he was stealing money. He was doing all kind of things left and right. So you run into that on one end. That's how I did when I was mostly working with the customs service, because I'm doing drug smuggling cases and fraud cases and stuff like that. But once I came on the internal affairs side, I saw corruption every day. So yeah, I had people who would come in, they would threaten us, or threaten me. People would come in, and sometimes at one particular case, I was doing an investigation, guy asked for a break and he went and killed himself. So, it's a lot of things that you run into in law enforcement. And when I say law enforcement, I'm not dealing with local PD. So, back in the day, the Compton PD or something like that. I wasn't dealing with locals. I didn't deal with the sheriffs. I didn't deal with LAPD or nothing like that. I dealt with all feds. So that's what I did.
Okay. Now, you have mentioned Kevin Burrell. Kevin Burrell was a teammate of mine in high school. He's a couple of years older than me. And also, he's a family friend. His parents and my parents grew up together in St. Louis. So, this guy, he was, like you said, a big guy, gentle giant. And even his basketball game proved that he had a nice soft touch. Now, I didn't get a chance to see him play in college. Tell us a little bit about his college career, how he
And
did.
first of all, let me tell you about Kevin. Kevin was one of the kindest and most gentle giants I've ever met in my life. He was fun loving, always wanted to be a cop. When he got into college, he was recruited on scholarship at Cal State Dominguez Hills. So when he came, he almost instantly came in and started because he's a big guy. He's about 6'7". About 6'7", 300 pounds. I mean, that dude was huge. He was 6'7", 300 pounds, and a gentle giant, but just quick on his feet. He actually holds some records for like rebounding, because he was a dynamo, and we loved him. I loved him, and he really made an impression not only on me but also my wife and. We later on we just continued to be friends, and when he died, it was just simply devastating to everyone because he was just like you saying, hey, he was just a family person, and everyone in the Compton community loved this guy because he was a difference in terms of cops as we know him, because he would come in and he cared about people. So instead of just arresting people, he would actually talk to them. Sometimes he would send people on their way, because he knew them. He was from a neighborhood. He was a neighborhood kid. And for them to kill that individual, it was just like, come on, out of all the people on a police force, you would kill him. So, I still to this day, I remember just everything about him. As a matter of fact, when he got killed, I lived not too far from Gonzales Park where he got killed, and I heard the gunshots. So it was wild.
Yeah, that was a hurtful time for me. I had a nephew that also got killed around the same time. So, yeah, rest in peace, Brother Kevin.
Yes.
So now, one more thing before I get to the rest of the panel. You said you did a lot of you. Well, you do a lot of traveling. In those travels, what? How did you approach people when they asked you about Compton? How was the experience when you let them know that you were from Compton?
A lot of times people would hear immediately say Compton and they would be taken aback, like, because all they heard really was things like rap, the rappers would get out there. So it was a negative influence. And oftentimes they would ask me, how was it to grow up in Compton? And I say, hey, it was just like anywhere else. We have wonderful people in Compton. We have wonderful neighborhoods. We have wonderful yards. And oftentimes people will come and see us, like come visit us from different places. And they'll say, hey, can you take us to Compton? We take people to Compton. And when we take people to Compton, we would, they were like, no, I want to go to Compton. I want to go to the hood. I'm like, you in the hood. We're up and down. What are you talking about? They said, this is not the Compton that we heard about. I said, yeah, we get a lot of negativity thrown our way, but we're just honest people trying to work and raise, raise our families and have, and do the best we can. But a lot of people will be taken back because, because they hear about Compton. So we told people wherever we went, that's why I said wherever we go, we represent Compton. We represent our race. We represent God. We represent, all types of people. So they're taken aback. They're blown away when they meet us. And really, when we run into a whole lot of Caucasian folks, they can't believe us. They always want to say, well, you must be an athlete or you all must be rich. I'm like, no, we're just hardworking people that saved our money and we like to travel and we like to do things.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, I'm going to get to the panel. Okay, Brother Ernest, question and comment for Brother Calvin.
Well, I'm glad to hear about all your traveling and all that, because that's something I never, even when I got drafted in the Army and sent to New Mexico, that was the first time I had been out of California, and I was like 23 then. But and then my time in Compton was like 25 years ahead of you. Because the guys I remember, like Centennial High School, Compton, we used to compete because I went to Long Beach Poly and we used to compete against them. And I remember guys like Charles Dumas, when he broke the 7 foot high jump record, and Kenny Thompson, they had hurdlers and Blaylock and Lowe. And so I'm kind of, this rapping and all this stuff came way after me. Cause like you say, you graduated in 58, I mean, in 88, when my youngest daughter graduated from Poly in 87. So you guys are around the same age. But, when I hear, and she's over in Grenoble, France now, trying to get my wife and I, you need to get your passport and come to France. She's been over there about 5 years.
Wow.
I said, well, no, I never really had a hankering to go places, because I worked for the Navy, Naval Shipyard, Department of Defense. And they send me to all kind of schools back in Virginia and in Washington, D.C. And, every time I went to school, I couldn't wait to get back home.
Wow.
So I'm totally different from you, but then I really envy you being able to go and do all that, and like your longevity in your marriage, because I just celebrated my 62nd.
Congratulations.
Yesterday, and then this Israeli attack and all that, they talk about that on the 7th. I say, hey, that's my day. I'm forgetting all about that because that's hard to me and my wife's day, and then that's the day they, here in Long Beach, they open up named the high school after my dad, through his NAACP work and civil rights stuff. So, and October 7th was the day we christened the school. Like, so to me, that's a total different date. But I really appreciate hearing from you saying that, because when I went to, to me, Compton, I always hear about it as good thoughts. I just say, hey, them guys keep beating us every time we play them, especially on track. They kill us. Because Centennial won the football, they won basketball, because they opened it up in 55, 54. And then all the guys that went to Fremont, Jefferson, and Jordan, and all other schools, good athletes, they flocked to Centennial, you know, changed schools, man. And nobody could beat them for a couple of years from in the mid-50s. Man, they was winning everything. So I always looked at that as a positive thing. You know, I've always had positive experiences. You know, hanging in Compton when I grew up, so that was really appreciate hearing about you traveling and all that.
I'm glad, brother. I'm
But
glad. I'm
thanks.
glad.
Happy for you. Yeah.
Thanks
Thank
a
you.
lot, Ernest. Can you tell us the years that you graduated high school and college?
Oh, I graduated. Oh, he did.
Oh, you talking about me?
Yeah, Calvin.
Oh yeah. I graduated from high school in 1980. As a matter of fact, this weekend is our 45th class reunion. So I'm a tar babe graduating then, and then college. I graduated in 88 because, like I said, I got my wife pregnant. We started young and we got married, and it took us a long time to get through school because we had to work. We worked full time and then we went to school at night. So we made it the hard way. And the way we went is that I would go to school, say, I don't remember exactly, but I would go like Monday and Wednesday. And she would go like Tuesday and Thursday. And then we both went to school on Saturday. And that's how we had to get through school. So it was a lot for us to get our degrees. And we were the first ones in both of our families to get degrees. So it was a big deal. And that was really with the education, that's been the approach that we use not only in our education, but also in our marriage. We became partners. You know, I married my partner. I didn't marry just a woman. I married somebody who we worked together. That's why everything we have made it together. You know, we work together, we work hard, we travel. That's my travel partner, my lover, my friend, everything. So that's how we have approached life. And that's actually what we do because we're marriage counselors now. So we do a lot of marriage counseling and we teach people how to really work as a team.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting you said that because a buddy of mine that helped me start get all of this going, he always talk about the team concept when it comes to relationships. Always talk about that, you know, learning how to play on a team. Now, okay, so that's excellent. I just want to say that I took the long route also after I finished playing basketball. That's when I got pretty serious about school, and it took me 10 years after high school to get my BA degree. But I
Okay,
got it.
that's right.
Perseverance. I beat you by 2 years. Be two longer years. Okay, let's go to Professor Amon-Ra. Professor Ra, you on mute?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Abani Ganya, everyone. It is beautiful to hear Brother Kressel to be on. His family was legendary and still is legendary.
Thank
His
you, brother.
father owned a stationery store. He was very invested in the community, very concerned about the community. That's why he ran for office. And the brother had a good role model to emulate. Mr. and Mrs. Kressel, that's his model of a relationship. And as he said, he lived in Richmond Farms. Richmond Farms had a couple of different reputations. One was that it was, as he said, a farmland, or, you know, people had animals and horses and even cows, chickens, and then plenty of land behind every house. And was looked at as an upper class part of Compton because the houses over there are very expensive. Many of the top personalities and political people lived in that area. The Tucker brothers, Walter Tucker, and they lived in Richmond Farms. Miss Arsenal lived in Richmond Farms. They all were part of the political apparatus and tradition of Compton. So, when you talk about the Kressels, you're talking about a legendary family that really made represented the best of Compton. And the other reputation is that they had some young cats that wouldn't stick to the script. And they call them farm dogs or whatever.
Oh, that's it. Those are my boys.
And so that's it. And when it comes to the Burrells, I met him and I played ball with him. And it was unfortunate that he was murdered. He didn't just die.
Yeah.
He was murdered by a person they pulled over him in McDonald's. And the guy just came out shooting them. And every year they would celebrate, the Compton police at that time would celebrate their death. And the community would come out and hold candles and things. Another thing, Compton, which I grew up in, partially I grew up in Watts, Compton, and Long Beach. But mainly, see, Compton became black on the west side. But Burrell know that when we were, well, probably when he came, they had integrated the east side. But before that, you couldn't even cross Compton. I think it was Sad Sacks and a few, things, Louis Burgers or whatever, right there on the corner. And we had a movie theater in the early days in Compton, in downtown Compton, a theater. We had the Compton Drive-In, of course. We had, you know, black people owning businesses. But they, me and the people that was in Compton, many of them moved from Watts. And after the Watts Rebellion and anti-poverty program, they began to move to Compton because Compton was looked at as a suburb. It wasn't as urban as it is today, stacked and packed. People own houses. When you go back out toward Willowbrook, you're near, like, as Burrell said, as Ernest said, you were near Imperial Courts and Nickerson Gardens and Palm Lane, and there was a Willowbrook area. See, Compton got county strips all through it. They call it Dominguez up there, East Compton. But it used to be just Compton. Mm-hmm. And you can tell the difference if it's a county strip or how Compton by the number of, on the houses, like, five numbers generally meant it was a county area. But they were all serviced by Compton police, mostly, and Compton Fire Department. We had Exum stores, we had pawn shops, we had two banks downtown, three, Capital, and we had Security Pacific, and we had Bank of Compton downtown took the place of Watts downtown for a little while. Because we used to go to Watts and shop, and then as people got affluent, they moved to Compton. I went to Markham, and a lot of the brothers that went to Markham ended up going to living in Compton. And as Ernest was saying, a lot of the people that lived in the projects went to Centennial. When they built Centennial in 50, opened it up in 54. Now they've tore down Compton High and built a brand new school.
Yeah.
And it looks like a university. It's so big, they annexed property around it. They tore down Ramsar Stadium, where the famous Compton a track meet used to be, and where Centennial and Dominguez and Compton would play their football games, and it would rock.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't have a football game without the Simpsonettes and the Tar Babes. Now, don't get me wrong, when they call them Tar Babes, they were the Tartars, because Compton College was on Compton High.
Mm-hmm.
student campus. And they were called the Tartars. So they called the high school Tar Babes, but they didn't mean black Tar Babes.
Mm-hmm.
They meant Tartars. And it's just a rich area. And we have a lot of outstanding athletes that went on to play pro ball that, you know, grew up in Compton. We had a number of parks throughout Compton, still have them. Where this Gonzales Park used to be Cressy Park. And we just lost one of the most legendary brothers that came out of Cressy Park was Bobby Watkins, who was probably one of the most talented athletes that ever came out of Compton. Played pro baseball, but he was great in basketball. Whatever he put his mind to, even marbles, he could shoot marbles, win the marble contest. You understand? I mean, we had two newspapers, the Herald American, the Compton Bulletin, and we had one time had the Compton Gazette. I mean, Compton's unique area had a par three golf course. The airport is not Compton, it belongs to the county, but it's in. They called it the Compton Airport. You understand? And you got the Venus Williams sisters that came out of there. They opened up a little tennis, the city donated a park, a tennis court for their name. It's just a beautiful setting. And the reputation that Compton got was no different than any other city. But they really focused on Compton because it was predominantly black at that time. Now it's predominantly Latino. And they just wanted to demonize the people that lived there that were affluent. And even if you were working class, if you had the Compton stigma on it, it was a way of it. Then they tried to make the rappers, who many of them didn't even live in Compton, but sung about Compton.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they became, as James Brown said, how did we get from black and I'm proud to singing about abusing women and shooting each other and things of this nature. Well, all that was part of the COINTELPRO. They didn't want an example of a beautiful city ran by black people. And so it's called a hub city because it's in the middle. You know, even Carson was supposed to be an extension of Compton, but they didn't want to become an extension of Compton. So they formed their own city. You have two cemeteries, had a bunch of mortuary people. I mean, Compton was a rich, affluent city. The black people that came there generally lived in houses for the most part. I mean, we had Park Village, but most of that was Samoans and things of this nature. Burrell, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But Compton was a very unique area all the way up to Avalon, going west and coming all the way back to, where Dominguez High is. I forget the street it was on, because that's on the border of Compton. Even though it's a Compton school, it's on the border of Paramount. And that was predominantly white at that time. When we played sports again, they were good too. And so it was a very beautiful place to grow up in, if you knew how and where to go, because you had an influx of street gangs in the 60s. And they began to emerge, Latte Flats, or what they call Tortilla Flats, that's the Latinos. And then you had the Swamps over there by Enterprise. And then you had, Mona Park Crips and all of that stuff. And then Lime Street Crips and things of this nature. And that came because of absence of fathers.
Mm.
It was a decline in a power, what we call power nuclear family, mother and father, because of the high rate of incarceration of black men and other factors of poverty. Because when you was first on the county, women couldn't have a man in the house. But then they changed it from a woman and children on welfare to families because so many men were out of work. And they was getting general relief. But I grew up, I had no problems. I was a street brother, you know. I was involved in a lot of stuff that I asked for forgiveness too. And as Brother Burrell said, we had some of the most dynamic ministers throughout the city of Compton. From Reverend Fisher, just ministers all over the place, and beautiful black churches and choirs. And it was a place that you can enjoy growing up in. Now, over here in East Compton, right across Willowbrook, they had some beautiful homes on Pine Street and various areas. You had the telephone company, and it was just a different thing, but they treated us different. And as I conclude, there was a time when they started food stamps. They'd make our people stand in line all the way around the building to get their stamps. And if you was late on your bill, you had to stand in line to go and pay your bill. But when you go to the white community, you never saw that. You never saw white folks lining up and going all the way out the door into the public. We had a welfare office on Arcadia, I think. Not Arcadia, but Tamarind and Alondra. I mean, it was intentionally designed to denigrate, degrade, and devastate the image of Compton. But I still live here. I could have committed class suicide a long time ago. I had the money to move out if I wanted to. Most of my brothers and sisters have moved out. But I'm still here. Me and the Latinos and a few brothers that are still here. So I really commend the Kressel family.
Bless you.
They were an outstanding example of a committed family. And I can understand why this brother grew up the way he grew up, because his mother and father were very hands-on parents.
Thank you.
And concerned parents. And shape their values and shape their image of a relationship. That's about it.
Thank you. Right.
Thank you, Professor Rao. Brother Ahi?
My ties to Compton, like as I first stated some time ago. It's my cousins over on McKinley. I think it's down from St. Anthony, right over by the middle high school, middle junior high. But I'm kind of interested in knowing about you guys' parents,
mm-hmm.
how they ended up in Compton, because you all of you are accomplished people, and I'd just like to know just a short, just to hear something about your parents, how they ended up, and something about their dispositions, and you know who were they in the community. That's all. Thank you.
You know, to kind of tag on what he is saying, here in Long Beach, we had the government housing projects, Cabrillo 1, 2, and 3, and Cabrillo 3 was all black. And when the government disbanded, you know, and most of those people worked at the Naval Shipyard and Douglas Aircraft Company, had good jobs. And when they disbanded Cabrillo 3, well, most of the blacks, they started redlining, and most of the blacks moved to Compton, because a lot of my friends, that's how I ended up kind of going up there, because they left Cabrillo and went to Compton.
Okay. You want to tell us about your parents, Brother Calvin?
Yeah, my parents, the way they got into Compton, they actually moved there when I was a baby. and they were able to buy a house. And that's what they wanted. They wanted home ownership. So they bought a house in Compton. Of course, that's where I was raised and all my family. And we took that house, and I saw my parents take and expand it. I don't know how many times to take that little house in Richland Farms and make it into just a beautiful two-story home. And we still own it. I still own it right now to this day. So, I've been blessed enough to my father, who was really a very educated man. Even though he didn't have formal education, he read a lot. He knew how to do a lot of things. And he believed in home ownership. And that's why even when he passed, he and my mom passed, they asked me if I would keep the houses that we had in Compton. And so me and my wife have pulled together, and we have the homes to this day. We have the home. We still have the businesses that many people talk about, that Old Crestle Stationery. It's not a stationery store now, but matter of fact, it's for rent if somebody wants to rent it. But we still have our homes in Compton. We kept them alive, and we have a legacy to actually bestow onto our children and our grandchildren. So we have continued to just build Compton. We've seen a whole lot of negative things happen in Compton, but now we see people, because you can really get home ownership still. So we have even Caucasian people trying to move back into Compton and different things, because as Professor Ross said, that's the hub city, and you can get to everywhere from that area, from Compton. And so the houses are valuable now. The value of property ownership is going up, and that's one of the things. We held on to our property. We've been blessed enough to hold on to it. Every day, we probably get at least about three or four calls where people want to buy our homes in Compton. So, but we're blessed. So I still have the home that I grew up in. I have my grandmother's home. I have some more property that my father invested in, and then some that we invested in ourselves. So we've been blessed enough to be property landowners. And that's one of the things my father always said. He said, "Calvin, one thing that they cannot make, and that's land. So if you got some land, keep it." So that's what he believed in, and we've been blessed enough to hold on to it.
What was your last name, Calvin?
Kressel. Kressel.
K
No,
with a
with a
K.
C. Kressel. Kressel. My dad, Fred Kressel. My mom, Ora Faye Kressel. And then, of course,
So
I'm Calvin.
where are your parents from? Where'd they come from?
My father's originally from Pine Bluff, Arkansas. And we would go there every summer. My mother is from Oak Cliff, Texas. And they met. My father actually met my mother. My mother's a graduate of Centennial High School. And when he came out here to live, he came out here to be a welder. And he came and he met my mom shortly after she graduated from high school, and then they got married, and the rest is history.
Okay, so yeah, I have ties to Texas, and I have family in Oak Cliff.
Oh yeah? Oh yeah.
Oh yeah,
We would go
yeah.
there every summer. That was our summer trip. We would go to Oak Cliff, and then we would go to Pine Bluff. And that was a Kressel Retro. We would drive. Back then, wasn't a whole lot of airplane stuff, so it was a lot of driving. And we took the family trip. My parents would always make it fun for us, though. They would drive, and then every night they would stop at a hotel, motel, something that had a swimming pool. And that was a big deal for us. So we would go swimming all while we were taking that drive. And we enjoyed it. All the kids would pack into that car, station wagon, and that we had back then, and we would just get on the road.
That's a great thing. Okay, I want to get to a few other people that came. We got somebody with the iPad. Would you like to unmute the person that has the iPad?
Oh, you talking about Vince? I was sitting in this. I'm a member. I'm a deacon at the church where the pastor preaches at. So I'm Vincent Woods.
Okay, you have a
Just
question or
listening in.
comment?
Well, I it was a blessing that I already know all that he's talked about there, because, like I said, I'm a member of the church there. So I've been with him for quite a while. He's a very good man. I've gone on several of those trips with him. So I'm really seeing another part of life that I didn't get to enjoy from the directions I was going in. I'm a longshoreman, and yeah, everything has been a blessing since I've been at that church. And matter of fact, he was one of the ones that married me and my wife. Him and my wife, the pastor and my wife, they went to school together. And that's how I got into the church. So he married me in 91, and I started hanging out with the church on retreats and stuff and got hooked. So now I'm hooked on Jesus.
All right.
All right. All right. Thank you for attending.
Okay. Thank you.
Somebody with the iPhone. iPhone, would you like to unmute? Okay. Let's go to one of your childhood people, Dr. Sherita. Dr. Sherita, would you like to unmute and say something to Calvin? What's going on with these muted phones? Hello. Okay, I'll come back. Brother Mashinda, that's another person that knows you from childhood.
Really?
Brother Mashinda, would you like to unmute? Oh, I guess folks are being...
Yo.
Hey, Brother Mashinda.
What's going on?
Hey, you want to say hello to your brother from another mother?
is this Calvin Kressel?
This is he.
Yes, it is.
You don't remember me, huh, Calvin?
He does, but you Brother Mashinda on here. He remembers
yeah.
you.
we'll talk offline, but... Hey, Calvin, Pastor Calvin.
Yeah.
How you been?
I've been wonderful, man.
I've been wonderful, huh? I remember y'all since the stationery store.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah.
We used to work up all the time, huh?
You used to play. Didn't you play for the Pirates?
No, man. I played for the Footsteps. I was a Footstep.
Wait a minute. No. Before that, though.
Baseball.
No. You played senior league with you was over there at Compton High School playing for the Pirates.
Now. The senior league you're talking about. Yeah. When we played senior
league. Well, did you play for the Pirates?
Yeah, I think I did back then.
Was your dad the coach?
Yeah.
I was playing with the Braves back then. That's a long time ago. But Ronnie Martell.
Yeah.
That was our coach. But anyway, I played with Jose Schlatter and Donald Butler and them.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, we used to whoop up on y'all, Calvin. But, I just joined and I didn't catch all what was going on. But it's a blessing to have you on tonight and good seeing you. And maybe I can see you again and we can, you know, chop up old times, you love know, it. Leave it at
I
that.
Love that. I love it. Reminisce, you know, you didn't,
yeah.
hear it, but all my family has gone on to glory. So I don't have a lot of people, Brother Mashinda, who really knows about how I grew up and different things like that. So I actually get sentimental when I get a chance to talk to somebody who played ball and different things like that. As a matter of fact, I really want to get together and try to do some type of reunion of all the people who played back at these different parks and different things like that at Victory Park, West Park, all these things, so we could really get together because that kept us out of a lot of trouble. We would just
No doubt. It was a blessing to have that. You know, like I said, I joined baseball late, but like I say, I caught on real well, and you know, I remember you, and I remember your dad. And that type of thing. I just wanted to add that, you know, that you was, but you know, I mentioned a brother Rasa Key. I said, when he told me that you were coming on, I said, Calvin was always smiling and always a good guy. He was just always it does not surprise me that you're a minister or something of, you know, someone of the faith or somebody that's doing something positive, you know, because you was always a positive guy. I can confirm that.
Thank you, bro.
All right. So the iPhone user and Dr. Sherita, I don't know if they're going to unmute to say something. Well, Professor Rock got a question or
comment. Yeah. What prison did you go undercover at?
Actually, I went in prison all the way in Florida, a place called Coleman. So they flew me down there. I had a whole different identity that I had made up, and I had to go down in there. So it was a big deal back then. But then they wanted me to do it again, and I was like, no. Nah. My wife was like, no, nah, you ain't doing that again, because I had to literally disappear for a while, and she couldn't even contact me. No one knew where I was at. So yeah.
But what were you investigating?
We're investigating corruption in the prison.
By the guards
were doing stuff, and then some of the inmates were doing things, and you know, you just have to. They needed somebody to go in, and they asked me. They needed a brother to go in, and since I was in that law enforcement arena, and they didn't have too many people of color, so they put me in there, and yeah, I'm glad I made it out.
All right. Well, Brother Calvin, man, I appreciate you being here. Any last words? And I want to talk to you later on about the relationship, because you have been very successful, as of other people also, and we're gonna be doing a series on Black male and female relationships, and so I'm working on that now. And I definitely want you to be a part of it. So
would love to. And as I close out, I just want to say that first of all, it's a blessing.
Time out. I think yeah. Dr. Sharita is unmuted.
Okay, Dr. Sharita.
Hey, peace.
Hey.
Long, long, long time. Our next door neighbor, next to our business, we were business neighbors.
I know who you are. I remember you and all the family.
Yes. Wow. It's been a while. It's good to see you. It's good to see you. And yeah, I'm in Compton. Same house.
Yeah, isn't that something? That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. I live in Ghana right now. I've been here the last 20 years, but you know, I come back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was kinda in and out because I was, you know, children calling and all kind of other stuff going on. But I just wanted to say hi.
All right.
Give you the greetings. Yeah. Yeah, good to see you. We gotta connect. Good. You gotta come by the shop.
I would love to. That sounds good. I'm gonna come by and holler at you.
Okay. All right. You take care.
All right.
All right, Brother Calvin. Close us out.
Hey, I just like to say, you know, like I was saying, it's just a blessing. Anytime I get an opportunity to talk about where I grew up and how I grew up and how I was able to really become successful, it is just a blessing to be able to articulate. And that's what I do. I try to give back to as many people as I can. And we have a saying, my wife and I, that success is not success unless you bring in someone else up with you. And that's what we try to do. We try to pull as many people up with us to inspire, to encourage, to actually even financially try to support people. And we do things like scholarships, and we just try to give back, because it's important that, you know, I always have a problem with people make it, you know, proverbial make it, and then they don't do nothing else. They don't do to give back. So it's all about giving back and making a difference. So that's what I stand for. And once again, I just thank you. Appreciate you all. I'm all around. I'm always around the area. So if you all need me, just call on me.
One thing I want to say, Calvin, that I forgot to mention, and I don't want to leave this out. You actually, your church that you have, there was a liquor store next door to it.
Yes.
And you actually got that liquor store, and now it's no more. And I think that's a wonderful thing, to take something out of the community that hasn't done as well.
Yes.
So I just want to applaud you for that.
Thank
and
you, brother.
Can you tell us your plans for that building?
Absolutely. You know, that liquor store that we're talking about is the first liquor store coming in from L.A. into Compton, and the last liquor store that was leaving from Compton going to L.A. It was where a lot of the gangs had merged. There's a lot of violence that was going on right there. And that one particular spot, which is right next to our church, more people were being killed in that spot than any other place in Southern California. And so it was an eyesore. Every day we would come in, we would have, I mean, not every day, but often we would come in and it would have been a shooting there, shooting, often killing. And we decided that enough was enough. So what we started doing, we start working together with the community, and we were able to get do a petition to get that liquor license revoked from a liquor store. And we were blessed enough because we always treated the liquor store owners really nice. And even though we got the liquor license revoked, they came to us to actually buy that liquor store. So we were able to buy it. But even that part is interesting because the way we bought it is that no one would give us a loan. I don't know if you all know this, but they don't give loans to churches. So we had to come up with a plan in order to purchase that building. And the way we purchased it is by our members. Our members actually put in the money themselves. They put in, first of all, we had to get four different individuals who gave 100 grand. And what they did, they loaned us the money. They loaned us the money so we could do it. They took it off of like their retirement, all their earnings. And then we were able to also take the money that we had started from our building fund, and we put it all together, and we were able to buy that liquor store outright. And what we're doing right now, we're in the process. The other brother who came on, his name is Vincent, the deacon who talked, he's actually we call him the pastor of construction because he's in charge of that building product, that building, redoing that building. And what we're doing, we're taking that building, turning it into community center. Resource center, community resource center, so we can provide the much needed programs in that area because there's a lack of a lot of resources. So we're working together. We're already working with mental health. We're working together with the homeless situation. We're working together with, we're going to have job, really building up career, people who are trying to get careers, do a lot of educational things. We're working with a program called Quarterback Daddy. And we were just on the phone earlier with all types of things that we're going to be doing. Right now, we have a free tax services that my wife runs, and we do free taxes for anybody, any low income, totally free. We do electronic filing. We have professionals that are in there working, and that's one of our ways of getting back. So we wanted to do something different in our ministry versus just, a lot of people do give out food and stuff like that. We do that too. But what we really wanted to focus on, we're doing different, unique things, which are reaching out to people and really helping them to become successful. And that's what we have in our church, by the way. We have a lot of successful people. We have, doctors and nurses, and then we have career people. My daughter's even a lawyer. And we have a lot of people who just invest in it and are making a difference. So that's what we want to do.
Excellent. That is very commendable, and we definitely going to talk because I have to support that effort. That's great. I'm glad to hear that. So I appreciate you, brother, and definitely want you to come back and build with us. I
All
definitely
right.
want to do that. So,
Thank you.
Professor Rob, who we got for next week?
In the morning, I can't remember.
Okay. All right. So next week, on our show, we have Dr. Inkey coming back, and the topic is protein for health and longer life. So that's what we have next week. And this has been very enlightening and encouraging for us to look at what Brother Calvin is doing and contribute in some kind of way, in our own way. So excellent, Brother Calvin. And we're gonna sign off. We're gonna take our pause. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great evening.
All right, thank you.